Hey, and we're back with another episode of the Right Hand Drive Guys podcast, the show for guys who like right hand drives. I'm Bobby. This is Aaron.
Yo, yo.
And this is the big episode number 69.
Oh, yeah.
And it's 420 today.
Dude.
Whew, this is pretty major in the sense of numbers colliding.
I don't know how we got this to line up.
The universe. Clearly.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Episode 69.
On 420.
There it is.
Yeah. So episode 69, we were like looking back at our episodes and like, you know, what do we like? What did we wish we had followed up on a little more? And one that I feel like could probably be expanded on quite a few times is the JDM Legends episode. And if you haven't listened to that episode, rewind, go back, hit it up. It was definitely, probably mid-40 episode. So we wanted to hit it back, come back and give or pay homage to another set of JDM legends.
Yeah, why not? There's plenty of them.
There really is. And, you know, we're like, all right, well, but should we do like shops or like the individuals who are maybe behind the shops or race drivers or, you know, like how are we going to really, you know, define this? And we're like, we should just start right here, right now, continue with just the guys who created the shops for now. So we're each going to throw one down. I'm going to go second. Aaron's going to go first.
That's right.
And you did tell me. Who is it?
It is no other than Daigo Saito.
Ooh, and this is a good one because we've actually spent time with him in person. So I'm interested to hear this because we also will be able to relate to some of the things. So go ahead.
Yeah, so Daigo, he's a little bit younger, like to be what most would consider a legend, I guess. But he's 44.
44. That really isn't crazy old for like the list that goes on for days.
Right, right. He's not, you know, like I said, he's not super old, but he's getting up there.
Yeah.
And, you know, his first season of D1 Grand Prix was in 2004. So he's been in the game.
Yeah, I mean,
he's been in the game for a long time.
That's when I graduated high school.
Right. So, I mean, he's been, you know, pretty much there since the uprise in popularity of drifting.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of been the man for that long, I feel like. And he's definitely been a huge influence on that scene and the whole worldwide scene. You know, so one thing about Daigo, he didn't just stay in Japan. Like, he went all over the world. And like you said, we're lucky enough to visit his shop, which is called Fat Five Racing. That's his shop, and that's also his race team, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever we went to a shop, dude, the walls were just lined with trophies.
Oh, yeah, like, they were.
Trophies had medals on them and, like, plaques. And, dude, you start reading some of these places, and it's like, okay, you see, all right, D1 Japan, D1 Street League, whatever. And then you see, like, Germany.
Indonesia.
Yeah. And then, like, U.S., you know, Formula Drift, and it's like, whoa, this dude is world renowned. Like, he like has taken this
just
worldwide.
There was literally like the big, huge checks like everywhere.
Like
his, it was basically like drywall. Like that's what he used for drywall. There's just checks,
dude, there's
everywhere.
Just checks everywhere,
and for a lot,
and
you know,
two Jay-Z's.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but yeah, that's one thing that I think was really cool about Daigo is that he didn't just stay in Japan. He went worldwide with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he won his first Japanese D1 championship in 2008. So it's about four years in pro drifting, and he finally won his first championship. And he was always into like the bigger four-doors, the JZX chassis specifically. Mm-hmm. He always had big four doors, and that's one thing that always stuck with me about him as well. You know, whenever I found out about him, I was, you know, looking on YouTube, looking up drift videos and, you know, whatever. I just remember Daigo. I would search Daigo and D1 GP, and you know, pull up all these crazy videos. Yeah. And I was like, what is he even driving? Is that a camera? Like, I didn't know what it
was.
Yeah. But it opened my eyes and, you know, it then influenced me. Like, that's probably one of the reasons why I like those chassis so much, because that was like one of the first times I saw a big four door drifting like it, he would. And he would, dude, he would throw it backwards, you know, over 100 mile an hour. And just, dude, I've never seen anything like it before. You know, where like usually the Japanese style, it wasn't, I don't know, it just wasn't as crazy, I guess you could say. Like, he really pushed it. You know, he was always going faster, always had more angle. His cars were always crazier. You know, always crazier built.
So he was for sure, obviously. I mean, you can tell just by meeting him, he's one of those guys that shapes, like, the way that the sport went, you know, in different ways. And, you know, like you said, two Jay-Z's everywhere, right? So, yeah, when we're walking through a shop, it's just all these different cars with just those motors. Or he has, like, a pile of these NASCAR V8s.
Yeah. And, okay, so that's another thing, too. He came to America for a while.
Yeah.
And he, well, not only did he compete in Formula D in 2012, but I believe he was over here earlier whenever D1 was doing things that, like, they would have an event in Irwindale or something every once in a while.
Irwindale Speedway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that specifically.
Yeah, so I remember hearing that, you know, whenever he came over, Samuel Hubinette was a driver for Dodge at the time, and he had a Charger, a Dodge Charger with a NASCAR V8 in it. And Daigo says that that engine is the best sounding engine that there ever was.
Yeah.
So, dude, he bought as many as he could.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, like, I saw a picture of, like, a pallet of them there.
Yeah,
but,
dude.
You know, a bunch.
And he's put them in everything. He's put them in a Ken Mary. He's put in a Hikosa. Like,
that's sweet.
All because they sound so cool. And, you know, what I just always think that's a crazy thing that he got a Dodge engine from, you know, a NASCAR V8. Mm-hmm. And he's imported it to Japan, and he's putting it in all these classic builds and whatever. It's cool.
That's,
I mean, that's Daigo. That's
for sure.
That's, you know, goes to show, like, a big part of his character.
I mean, I felt like, I could tell he had been in the U.S. because the way he was talking to us was definitely not like all the other Japanese people that we met.
Right.
You know, he was much more able to handle, like, a conversation. And so that I was like, oh, wow, so he's definitely been around, because you don't know English if you don't need to know English. Right.
Yeah. He probably knows a lot more than he leads on.
You're probably right.
You know, because, I mean, he is, like, whenever we were around him, he's just a quiet dude, humble, you know.
Just he's super cool.
Chilling
to you,
with his baggy pants and hair slicked back, dude.
Yeah.
He's just chilling.
Yeah, no, he was definitely his own vibe.
So, yeah, his shop, Fat Five Racing, they've came on, I think, within the last 10 years or so, pretty big. But they don't just build his cars. They also build customer cars. Like, I believe it's right when we were there, there was an SLS Mercedes with, like, the gold wing doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw that.
And I think it used to be a GT500 car, a GT300, some sort of race car like that. And they're converting it to a drift car. There's plenty of other tube chassis, you know, S13s with 2Js with huge turbos on there being built. There's that crazy Corvettes we've talked about before. Like, it's like his shop is just insane, dude. And, like, it's just crazy the amount of work that they can put out of there.
So he's still competing?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not sure this year, but I know he did last year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's definitely still out there. Like, he's definitely still driving. I mean, we saw him take a few laps, like, at Fat Five Land.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you could tell he knows what he's doing. And even just when he was warming up that, what is it? Was it an 8086? Right?
Yeah, it was an 86.
An 86, yeah. He was like, it's just his foot on the throttle. Like, okay, you've done this about 10 million times, obviously.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, you could just tell, dude. That guy knows. And, like, that was just such an insane day at that shop. And just being there and seeing all those, like, crazy Ferraris and Lamborghinis and all in that front room. I know we've talked about this before on the previous episode we've talked about his compound. But
yeah, yeah. No, I
dude,
mean,
it just I can't get
his
enough
style
of it.
Is his style is definitely like unique, which makes it just adds to him. And
yeah,
I mean, he had like this crazy wide body Corvette thing, just like hard parked at Fat Five Land, just
off to
there.
The side, dude.
Same with this old wagon. I can't even remember what that was, but it was like a U.S. automaker.
Right, right. And that's the thing, dude. Like I think he's obsessed with American stuff, just like we're obsessed with the Japanese stuff,
which is cool. So then when we come over, he was definitely open arms to us, and like you said, super humble, and let us, you know, or let Jesse rip around in the Miata and do his thing. And so, he was definitely cool. So he's still competing. He's 44.
Yeah.
He's got his own shop. He's got his own events that he holds at Fat Five Land. Yeah. He obviously has, because I just saw he just built some car that's for him because it's got Monster and like his stuff on it. So he must
have something.
Yeah, because I was like, dang, he's still a monster.
Is it a Supra?
Oh, yeah, it is.
It is a Supra. Yeah, okay, I remember seeing that as well.
Yeah, he's still like a monster athlete at 44 drifting. Like that's, if you think about who Monster sponsors and stuff.
Right.
That's like kind of. Like,
Vaughn Gittin, like another high end of the sport, you know?
For sure.
Yeah, I remember when he first got on Monster. That's when he was he was building that Murcielago, I believe.
Yeah,
and he was drifting that. And I remember like people just went nuts when he did that.
Because that was one of his not publicity stunts, but one of those things that he knows was going to set people off.
Right, right. This thing with a Liberty Walk, it had a Liberty Walk kit on it too. Like it's just like what?
I need to look up some videos of that. Like holy moly.
We'll be right back. You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
Dude, I mean, yeah, dude is just a man. And like, I remember when he came to the States for the first time in 2012 when he did Formula D. Dude, he shut the place down. He like showed up in a SOAR, a newer SOAR, not like the older ones. In the States, they were the, what were they? The SC430, you know, like the two-seater convertible, like nothing special. Dude, he showed up with one of those with a Bill 2J and like, you know, it had the full Daigo treatment to it. And he just killed everyone. Just dominated. He first year in America, he won the championship. He won the championship and Rookie of the Year same year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Dude. Insane, dude. He's a madman.
So, yeah, he is a legend. He's definitely a legend in the drift world. Yeah. And, yeah, I mean, what's cool about him, you know, of course, we got to go to Fat Five Land, but when we had seen him the previous April at Ebisu, he was definitely helping people. Yeah. I don't know if he was drifting.
He was. I don't think he was, but he was hanging out with the Manoas, which like is another kid that's kind of grew up around him, the Shinji Manoa, I believe.
Yeah.
He's 16. He's in Formula Drift this year in America.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I saw him. Yeah.
So that kid is kind of grew up, you know,
with him. So he was supporting him. Yeah. And that's what it seemed. He was checking out the car, doing, you know, and he had his bling on and his.
Dude, he was full Daigo out there.
Yeah. Yeah. His vibe is definitely. Awesome.
Dude is cool.
Yeah.
Definitely cool. I hope I'm that cool when I'm 44.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to live up to that, but we can try, right?
Dude,
we can
try. I could definitely try.
So that's cool. So anything else you want to add about him as far as, you know, I mean, obviously we could sit here and talk about his accolades for days and, you know, all that, but I just didn't know if there was any.
No, I mean, that that's pretty much it, dude. He's just pretty much the man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, he's, and I'd agree 100%.
He's like becoming that OG.
Oh, for sure.
You know, whereas like DK was kind of the man, for that 90s era and that late 80s, 90s era.
Yeah.
I feel like he's kind of the man
for
that 2000s, 2010 era.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, and he probably, I'm not saying he's coming to the end of his career, but.
Yeah, no way.
Obviously, in the sense of he was going way harder before. And it's just like anything, right? Like if you or I went and entered race league, end up getting rookie of the year, winning the championship, things accelerate extremely fast at that point, right?
Yeah.
So we can tell just by, dude, and I can't stress enough, like there was more trophies and checks and medals than I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. Like just
but,
on his walls.
However, his first year in D1 Japan in 2004, that first year, he did not score a single point for the championship. He didn't score a single championship point. So
that's wild.
That's wild. So from that to 4 years later in 2008, winning the whole championship.
Yeah, that's pretty, pretty big time. I mean, and so I guess, at the end, my point was, he's bound to slow down, right? Yeah. Because also when you've been doing something for 20 years,
right.
you maybe still love it, but maybe you don't need to be.
Right, you've already done it.
Yeah, for sure.
You've seen that. You got the t-shirt.
Yeah, you got the
you got
t-shirt.
The trophy.
You got the check, yeah. So that's cool. Much, much respect and much love to Daigo,
absolutely.
For sure. So when I was thinking about, JDM Legend, like, who am I going to do? What, because like we said, there's so many options, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For some reason, I tend to go with my gut, I guess you could say. And for some reason, like Tomai came to mind. Like I was just like, Tomai, like how did that start? And I started, researching. I'm like, who started this? When did this start? Like, because, let's just say you or I.
Yeah.
Tomai started with our generation of cars, right? Without doing research, that's where all of a sudden it just poof.
Yeah.
Came up when we got into cars.
Why would they make anything else before the 90s?
Yes, exactly. And doing my research, and I find out is actually started in 1968.
Whew.
So literally 30 years prior, 35 years maybe prior to us ever even hearing about
I think that's before HKS, right?
I think, yeah.
Like, it's a few years before HKS. That's pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, it is. And so it was founded by a man named Seichi Suzuki. And so he was born in 1936. He was already, whatever.
Old school.
Yeah. He was already 32 years old when he founded Tomai.
Yeah.
And so he worked at and was a driver for Nissan already. He was a race car driver. That was his main thing, was racing for Nissan, working with him for development. And then he quickly realized that Nissan was going to hold him back when it came to developing some of these products because it didn't align with that factory type, product. So, creates Tomai. They start doing in-house R&D, all of that. Meanwhile, he's still racing for Nissan.
Hmm.
So he's like, kind of, right? I don't know exactly back then whether they knew or not. I couldn't find much about that. But his main thing was a tuner and engine builder.
Yeah.
That's what he, really enjoyed doing. And so he brought on some friends to the company, he brought on his sister as the receptionist, and they really started going at it. But, unfortunately, only 6 years later into it, he's at a race at Fuji for the Fuji Championship Series.
Mm.
And this was back when, if you've listened to any of our episodes, that Fuji has had multiple kind of track layouts.
Right, yeah.
They've progressed over the years. And, back in 1974, it was still very a dangerous track with high bank corners and, you know, some different little, you know, features that made for real dangerous racing.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, this guy and another guy are fourth and fifth in this race. It's out the first corner, and the two or the three people in front of them crash into the wall and create like a big, you know, kind of dangerous area.
Yeah.
Him and the other guy head into it.
Oof.
The cars explode. The guys die like on site. Right.
Yeah, right.
And, the article I read was like, yeah, they even decided to cancel the race because of the circumstances. I'm just like, it's crazy Holy how cow. Serious racing was that, you know, they even have to say that about right. two men dying on the track.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, the corner was called Daishi.
Mm-hmm.
And, after him and this other man died, they actually created like a turn before Daichi, and that closed Daichi forever. So his crash and death created the first change in the Fuji layout
wow.
that eventually got it to where it is today.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, as I said, he had brought in, you know, his friends, his other coworkers, his sister, and he had clearly passed on his spirit and love for the machine.
Yeah.
And so, of course, like I said, this is 1974. So 84, 94, 04, 14. This is 50 years ago that this man died.
Right.
And as we know today, Tomai is still here.
Oh, yeah.
And so these people who continue to run it for him really have tried to keep it to the same specs as he originally created,
yeah.
down to even the machinery that they use, how often they update, you know, technology. There's, yeah. they don't have, you know, $150,000, you know, lathe that does it all for you, right? Yeah. They're still hand turning everything. They're still checking clearances manually.
That's probably why they're so quality.
Right, exactly. They're still doing that. And it wasn't even until COVID that they updated their computer system for, it was like 30 years. Whoa. They had not updated their computer system until COVID.
Man, can you yes. imagine working in somewhere in 2020 and they have a computer from 1990?
Seriously.
Like that's literally what that is.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah, it was like you said, DOS, you know, like commands to yeah. get, you know, and they were doing everything by hand. And
wow.
So, which is kind of crazy when you think about the amount of parts that they put out and how they had to contact people and
yeah.
do everything by hand over phone, mailing. Yeah. Which, you know, I don't know if it would be easier or harder in Japan to get by like that. Part of me thinks easier.
Probably because they're yeah. so traditional.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so so again, these people are still using the same tools. They're yeah. still doing it the same way. And it still is the same people running it, of course, with other employees, you know, under right. them. You know, but one thing about Tomai is they have been one of these Japanese brands that's been targeted by a clone or a,
well,
you know what I mean? Like yeah. a rip-off scam. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but there's Tomei USA now and has been for the past X amount of years
yeah.
that's producing the same parts, different logo, Tomei powered, which is Japan,
yeah.
never registered their trademark or anything in the United States.
What?
Yep. So it's kind of like the Bride Canada thing where like...
I've seen people bring that up, but I always thought it was just like their American leg of distribution.
No.
Or something, you know?
There's
like I figured they were just making exhaust and stuff in America rather than shipping them over. So it's completely different? Wow.
Yeah, it's a like clone company that like registered Tomei.
No way. There's here. Starting to be a lot of that, I feel.
Yeah. And so a lot of people, and they didn't like announce this. Tomei USA didn't say we're not Tomei powered.
Right.
They didn't say that. So people have reported their cams breaking or cracking.
Oh, yeah.
And all these different things. And it's giving Tomei powered a bad name and sales drop when they have nothing to do with it. They're still producing their quality parts they have since 1968.
Right.
You know, so like that would be tough because also, like I said, they didn't even upgrade their computers until COVID.
Yeah.
Literally. So right. They don't even know. They don't even know about Tomei USA. They could care less. They're banging out cams, dude.
Dude, they're on their own island. They
don't care. Exactly. So
wow.
This is all happening and they're not addressing it. So it's getting too carried away. And now I've noticed over the past 6 or 8 months, especially since people have started really voicing the lower quality of Tomei USA.
Yeah.
Tomei powered has been stepping in and creating warnings and posts and
dude, that's crazy. I literally thought that was just their.
No, it's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Even when I saw people talking about it, I just didn't look into it that much. That's crazy.
Yeah. Just figured that they were kind of, you know, coming over here and that was just, yeah. But the logo is completely, well, not completely different. It's the same block lettering, but the thing to the left is slightly different. Yeah, which I don't
scumbags.
Know how somebody can really get away with that. But I guess if you're sending parts from Japan to here to a distributor and they're getting distributed, like that's just what it is, right? That distributor bought all of those turbo outlets and whatever it was from you.
Yeah.
You're just like, okay, you don't even have a computer to email them. You got to wait and call them at 6 a.m. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I personally have Tomei parts on my 33. I have the turbo outlets, I had mentioned.
I think the exhaust.
And mine on the 33, both Tomeis. And so, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I like their parts, I think.
Yeah, they've always been, I don't know, like that higher tier quality, you know, right up there with HKS or...
And they produced a lot for these type of cars. Like they got their arms, the ARMS turbos.
Yeah.
You know, they're bolt onto the stock.
Yeah, not just SRs and RBs. They had them for, you know, all the Subarus and.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. There's a list of cars, Mitsubishis.
Yeah.
They did a lot with the 4G63. Like,
dude, and I'm sure you still can, but I remember back 15 years ago or so, I would always get on Injuku Racing, dude, and look up their like crate engines, and just drool.
Oh yeah,
dude. 10K. Oh, dude, if I can just get 10K, dude.
If I
could
get
this,
I
could get this SR20 long block, dude, and put it in my 180. I'd be set.
You would be.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be because I wouldn't have anything else.
I mean,
useless. But yeah, they were just always that, like just. Anytime you seen any of their parts or anytime you saw that stamp or any of that, you're just like, oh, okay, that's
legit. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know. It's one of those things. If it didn't start with this guy just having that, you know, desire to R&D and create products that, you know, the manufacturer wanted to limit, we wouldn't have had those things, you know. And they do... Yeah, they do everything, you know, they, like you said, they build motors, they sell the parts for motors, they do head work, they'll do just about whatever, and especially if you're in Japan,
of course. I'm sure, you know. Dude, if they...
Imagine dropping off.
Hey, give me a refresh.
Yeah, just a little refresh, yeah. A
couple hundred thousand yen later, dude, you're set.
Yeah, and so they engine dyno everything and put it through the test to make sure it's good for you. So yeah, I mean, Daigo Saito, Sechi, Suzuki, both definitely two legends in their own regard.
Definitely in their own regard.
You know, in totally kind of different sides of it.
Yeah.
You know, but again, both people that contributed to, you know, like the car culture in that sense.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, this was the JDM Legends episode.
69-420.
69-420. That's cool. This one will go down in the books for sure. But again, you know, hit us up on the YouTubes at RHDGUIS. Check out the website, all that good stuff. And for episode 69, I'm Bobby. This is Aaron.
See ya.
Peace.